You're listening to the Heroes Power Hour, presented by BlizzPro.com. Your hosts, Balrog Fan, Zexorus, and DJ Tyrant. Everybody, and welcome back to the Heroes Power. We are Heroes of the Storm podcast, brought to you by BlizzPro.com. I'm your host, DJ Tyrant, and with us is the crew, as always. Zexorus, how are you doing? How's your week in Heroes been? What you been up to?
I haven't played any Heroes at all, to be perfectly honest. I've been really busy this week, so I haven't had a chance to like sit down and actually play Heroes until just tonight. Like, I did the Bloodlust Brawl, which I forgot, I just violently hate. I think it's the dumbest brawl there is.
It's a real crapshoot, is what it is.
It's real crap, is what you meant.
Okay, yeah, that too.
Other than that, it's just been me just plugging away on the player versus player on Final Fantasy 14 and realizing how lazy Machinist is there. It's just sit way back and just pot shot anybody who comes into range. It's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. Charlie, how about you? How was your weekend gaming?
Pretty busy, actually. I didn't get a chance to do a lot of gaming. Mostly just mobile phone stuff. We played some Heroes today, and that was fun. Not sure how I feel about Stukov yet, but we'll get into that.
I know I'm not a fan of the shovel.
Yeah.
It requires a little bit of coordination.
Not in the hands of Willy.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't see a single good shove out of enemy Stukovs either.
I saw two out of Willy that were good. Oh, actually, before you jumped in, he kept shoving. We played a game against Cho'Gall, and he just kept shoving Cho'Gall out of the fight. That was pretty great.
That's pretty funny.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
But yeah, P-Flame G, how about you?
I'm just going to talk about the pre-show games, but I played two games. I played one game is Kael'thas and one game is Gul'dan, who are two ranged assassin heroes I'm very practiced on, and we lost. And then I played Malthael, who's level 2, and we won. So nothing makes sense.
I'm telling you, that's on me, man. My engages were awful as Arthas. As soon as I switched to Diablo, we could actually flow into fights. I wasn't like feeding or doing like really bad damage on Arthas, but my engages were sloppy and garbage. I don't know how to fight on him, really. I feel like I'm supposed to wait for a hook and I end up like staying out of fights too long. I don't know, my bad.
It happens. But I got in the last few games there. It was a little fun. My internet went down on Thursday and wasn't fixed until yesterday, so I really have not had the chance to play much of anything, except I got a Switch, and now I'm going to be sucked into Breath of the Wild, and we'll be turning the power into game. Zelda Breath of the Wild, and we'll be discussing
such
that
a good game
going forward. So, go for it.
I want to get in my week of games. As I went, my wife and I went to see the Symphony of the Goddess, the Legend of Zelda Symphony thing in Austin. It was super cool.
Nice.
All right, we can talk about the actual game this podcast is about now.
Yeah. No, that sounds cool. I've always loved video game concerts. I got to go to the ones that they had at BlizzCon for, I think it was Video Games Live. And obviously, I'm a big fan of Blizzard music. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing a podcast about Blizzard games. But it was cool to see that done. But yeah, I imagine the Zelda one was particularly cool. I know they've done that for Final Fantasy and other games as well.
I think instead of doing the podcast, we should just let Carl hum three of his favorites.
Yeah, there we go. Oh my goodness. But we did have a really awesome interview that we got to do with Casanova from No Tomorrow. And Zex, do you want to explain a little disclaimer before we start this up?
So, the interview was great. We had a lot of fun doing the interview. And then I go to, check the file And I realized there's no audio on my end. There's perfect audio out of Charlie and Casanova. There's nothing out of me. So what had happened was OBS randomly decided that, hey, you know what? We don't like your microphone. We're going to switch it back to default. And I didn't realize it before I started the interview. So I had to go back this morning, go through the interview, write a script out of what I thought I'd said just by watching my lips move. And then I had to go back again and then record the script over what I thought I was saying. And so
we dubbed our own interview.
I dubbed my own interview, essentially. So it's going to look a little kung fu-ish, and there's a couple of parts where you're going to notice he's like, he has no idea what he said. Because, like, I'll stop short. You're like, oh, I was still talking crap. I didn't say enough. So you kind of hear me, like, kind of BS around a little bit, trying to, like, fill that space. So it's very... On my end, it's very kung fu-ish, so I apologize. It's fixed. I just need to calm down. And be like, okay, is everything good? Yes, everything's great. Yeah, love it.
But yeah, I'm excited for this interview. I haven't watched it yet. I haven't had the chance to, so this will be a lot of fun. We're going to get into it. It's a little over 30 minutes long, and we'll see you on the other side to talk about the patch. Stukov and many other things. See you in a bit.
Okay, so we have our interview and we have a very special guest. It's going to be Casanova from No Tomorrow, currently sitting in a tie for first place. Welcome to the show, Casanova.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's get into the beginning. What got you into competitive gaming?
So I played World of Warcraft starting when I was 8 years old. But before that, I started playing video games when I was 5, and I started originally with chess when I was 3 years old. I learned how to play from my grandpa. And then from there, I just, like, fell in love with, like, strategy gaming in general. From there, like, my godfather bought me an Xbox when I was 5 years old. And so I just started gaming ever since.
So was that the OG Xbox?
Yeah, the original Xbox. Played Star Wars Battlefront. It was a big, big one I loved. Yeah.
Chess at the age of 3?
Yeah.
I think I might have still been chewing the pieces at 3.
Now, I learned how to play chess from a neighbor back in the 80s when you didn't have to worry about people, you know, taking you and stuff. And I remember going over to her house and seeing the chess set and going, ooh, what's that? And she was like, it's chess. And she asked me if I wanted to learn how to play. I was like, okay.
Yeah, my grandfather drilled chess into us at a young age. Me and my brother both learned. So, yeah, I played all kinds of tournaments growing up.
Do you pay attention to the competitive chess scene at all?
No, I haven't played in a long time. I stopped playing probably at start of high school. I haven't played really since then much.
Oh, so when chess stopped being cool?
Yeah, about the time video games become a lot cooler than chess. Yeah.
All right, so I believe Charlie had a question for you.
Oh, yeah, just the other day, you threw out a tweet talking about your favorite moment from the day. It was a Stitches hook. Why don't you just talk about that a little bit, because it was a really good highlight.
So I come from a League of Legends background. I played for 5 years prior to switching to HOTS last year, just a year I've been playing. And one of the big things in League is, like, prediction. There's even a name for it, and even on the cast, Dreadnought called it out. It's called a Mad Life, is where you just throw a hook ability and predict a dash or blink ability to land the hook. And so I have implemented that in HOTS ever since I've been playing. I know a lot of top players do it, but really I just was following the Tracer, and we saw her coming out, and I waited for Equinox to go on her, and I just started counting blinks. So I knew she had jumper, so out loud in comms, I'm sitting there, I'm like, all right, one, two, three, I'm like, fourth blink, and I threw the hook, and he blinked right into the hook, so it's like, I love playing high skill matchups like that, because Stitches is already good into Tracer just due to the fact that Slam is so overtuned that, like, anytime she doesn't have a Tash Shield on her, you're going to chunk about 30-40% of her HP with just a Slam.
Right.
Yeah, I remember back in the day, Stitches used to be more overtuned with the Stun Slam back in the Tech Alpha. And that was a really good ability. Like, you could just stuff channeling ults, like, so hard.
Yeah, I did hear about that. I didn't play back then, but I did hear about the fact that he had the mini stun. They switched it to the slow, right, on 16 is what?
Yeah. Oh, those were different times.
Yeah, it was just really brutal to play into a Stitches. And then they nerfed that, and he hit his ability to do anything just went
away. They had a buff about, I don't know, 3 months ago maybe, where it was like an actual large buff to the damage on Slam, and then they gave him an HP buff as well. And
you get a little more attack damage too, I think.
Yeah, something like that. I just know it went under the radar. I was playing Melee at the time. I know I brought it up with our team, but we didn't really explore it that much just because it didn't seem like a small buff to damage would have done that much. But it's like compounding with the buff to damage, plus on one he has 50% increased damage. So any buff is then getting buffed, like buffing that talent as well.
Right.
From that, I think EU kind of picked on it up on it a little faster since they liked Stitches anyway. They played him even before that. They played him a little bit, and so they picked up on it quicker, and then everyone just started trying it, and they're like, oh yeah, this is a little busted, so.
That's good. I mean, it's like you said, he's a high skill cap hero, so he's a lot of fun to watch, and I'm sure just as much fun to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a previous MOBA background. I came from Dota 2, and you know, I played Pudge a lot, and coming over to Heroes, like, it was a lot of fun because his hit wouldn't interact with friendly units, and I went back and tried to play Dota 2 a while ago, and, like, it was really hard. I kept hooking teammates because Pudge hooks always hook the first thing it hits.
Just hooking your teammates all the time, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, going back to that, you played a previous role, and now you're the main tank role. How difficult was it to transition from the previous role you were in into that tank role? Did you have problems doing that at all, or, you know, did it feel kind of smooth for you trying to, you know, going into that tank role?
So I'd say it's even, like, I'm still transitioning into the role. Like, I actually think tank is probably the hardest role in the game to play. People don't really notice that as much because, like, mechanically it's not that hard of a role. At least I don't find it that difficult compared to, like, melee assassin or ranged assassin. But there's so much more stuff you have to do as tank. Like, there's a lot more than just playing your character. Like, you have to body block skill shots and, like, anchor bushes. You need to be looking to know when to peel, when to dive backline, know when you can go in without just instantly dying, because as tanky as you are in competitive play, it's not that hard to blow up a tank. So there's really just a lot of, like, knowledge involved in the role, and like, even before last phase, I never had any, like, real tank experience. Like, I played tank for one amateur team one time, but then I got switched back onto melee due to the fact that they felt I was a better melee player than the one that we currently had on that team. That's back when I played with June from Tempo Storm before he made it onto Murlocs.
Was that during Barrel Boys?
No, that's long before. Like, this is, before I was even, you know, a top amateur player. So it had been a long time, and on all the teams I was on leading up to Barrel Boys, I played a carry role. When we had double tank, our flex player played tank, and I would play a range DPS or another DPS. So I would only play DPS leading up to Barrel Boys. And in Barrel Boys, I played all the off tanks. So that was a learning experience for me. I had to learn all the off tanks. And then now I'm switching on to tank, and it's like a completely new world from what I was used to, because like as an amateur player, I was a just known in the pro scene or in any scene as just this mechanically skilled player, and I didn't know that much about the game yet because I had only played for a few months at that time. So moving into this like role, which I feel is the most difficult role due to just the sheer amount of game knowledge that you need to like accumulate and how to know what you need to do at any given moment, it's just like it's very difficult. And I think that's why, I mean, if you watch my HGC games, I'm fairly inconsistent right now. I have games that just like I play incredibly and I do just almost everything right, and we have great games together. And then there's some games where I, you know, don't do very well. Like I'll get picked off because like I don't think I'm gonna die from 100% at that point, but then like there goes my health bar, right? Like it just disappears. And it's like, it's just things that I'm still learning, because even with the large amount of scrims we go through, like everyone plays better at tournaments, so you get punished way harder for small mistakes during your tournament matches. So there's a lot of times where it's like I look inconsistent right now, and I'm just working like really, I play a lot of extra hours playing tank, just trying to work to get to where I need to be.
And to your point, even at the lower levels for tanks, like in Hero League and Team League, stuff like missed rotations or not watching your minimap, it can cost your whole team, you know? Something simple 100%. Like that. There's so much you have to learn. Yeah. So I totally agree. The burden of gameplay knowledge and reaction is a lot heavier when you're in that role. Yeah, you spoke about Equinox joining. What kind of effect has he had on the team?
Just the big thing about having Equinox is his shot calling. It's the reason we picked him up in the first place was to get a just proven known shot caller onto our team who has, you know, good mechanics as well. Because I think that's the main thing we were missing. Because when we were Barrel Boys and we were starting to look really good, we had a really good shot calling dynamic between Tiger JK and McIntyre. But after losing McIntyre, that just like evaporated, and I think that's why we struggled a lot. So bringing in a big voice that is shot calling, even though he's not bouncing off Tiger JK as much, it's more just Equinox, and then we all feed a lot of information to him. I think it's just been a huge change that is helping our team a lot.
It looks apparent, that's for sure. Yeah. It looks really good to watch. Were you going to jump?
For sure. Yeah, I wanted to ask about that boss play. I think it was on Sky Temple where you guys were down 20s.
Cursed Hollow.
Yeah, you guys made that boss play and got core. And I was wondering how hard Equinox was yelling during that play. I feel like he was maybe going, "Go core! Go core!"
So it's actually very funny. With that boss play, we were actually very calm. We were all sitting and waiting for them to go top. So we called for Jason to show on top side to make it look like we want to do our boss. And as soon as we saw three members of GFE on the top side, we instantly started their bottom boss. And the intention the entire time was to go core. It was like, we're down two levels. It's 18 to 20. This play, this boss, it's late enough in the game that they don't have enough damage to kill it in time and kill us. So it should be a core guaranteed once we get it. And then we took the boss, and so we just, like, knew going in, like, we're, like, boss and then core. So we're just kind of all keep reminding ourselves, like, play slow. And then we were, like, we called to pressure them off of the boss. And since they had this comp to blow up Tracer with the curse bullet and the taunt, I ended up getting picked. And I think Akka, was he on Brightwing? Yeah, he was on Brightwing. He landed a really clutch polymorph onto Tiger, so he couldn't get his palm off on me. And so they ended up being 4v5, and that's the point when it got a little bit more loud and everyone was yelling, you know, like core, like a target specifically to just peel off of someone. And those four played the core extremely well, and they were able to get the win on that. So
it was a really gutsy play, and it was really frantic and hectic to watch as a viewer. And
absolutely,
we absolutely love watching those kinds of, you know, high stress plays. I mean, it's just amazing, you know, to see.
Oh, I feel you. And the thing is we go into it, we don't know 100% that that's a core. Like, we're pretty sure we can get it, and we know what we do know is that's our absolute best option. Like, we can't not make that play. If we don't make that play, we're just definitely going to lose in a few minutes. Like, it's, we'll just slowly bleed out because they have 20s on us. They're going to get a curse soon or whatever. Like, we know we're going to lose if we don't make that play. So at that point, we take the one play that's given to us. We push for the core. You know, after we won, of course, everyone's screaming, popping off, like, because, you know, you get so excited that you were able to take a game that was, you know, that one game we were like, you know what, GFE, I think we said they kind of outdrafted us, even though usually on Task Tracer we're just extremely comfortable, and we've shown that. I think we only lost one Task Tracer game, and it was that last game 5 against GFE, and we threw that game so hard, like, we had the lead the whole time, so we were very comfortable with that. But we think they just had a great draft into it, and they played the rotations really well, and it was just, you know, we just made the better end game calls, and we were able to win.
Yeah, that whole set was, you know, absolutely, you know, amazing. You know, the set could have gone really either way, but I definitely feel like No Tomorrow definitely proved themselves in that set. You know, it was really, really fun to watch.
Yeah, not trying to take anything away from GFE. They definitely earned it. I'm just saying that one Tomb of the Spider game in particular, we were in the driver's seat the whole time, and all we had to do was get that last turn in and end the game, and we just ended up splitting up and trying to do too much at once. We tried to do boss and stop turn-ins, and I think I ended up getting picked because of that, which was my own mistake. And after that, it gave them a chance to come back, and we made a few more mistakes down the line. They played the comeback really well, and they ended up winning. So a lot of props to them as well. Too many mistakes from us that we couldn't possibly have at the international stage, so it's good to learn that now and then keep working towards that, because mistakes like that are going to make you lose every single time against good teams. So,
going back to HGC talk, in the last phase, you guys were a Crucible target. And now you guys are in a tie for first place. How does it feel going from last place to the position
hopefully
you're currently in? Yeah, I think you're also a target for the Western Quest.
It feels good to be, like, winning now. It feels a lot better because it's more fun to play. Like, we're all enjoying the game a lot more right now, which is very important. I think, like, if you're not enjoying it, then, you know, why do it? And so we're all enjoying the game a lot more, and winning means a lot because, you know, I basically, this is my life, you know, like, I'm not doing anything else. Like, I dropped out of school to pursue HGC, and so when I made it in, it meant a lot to me, and the fact that we're winning now is really, like, really important, because I really want to play international. Like, that's what I want to do. Like, I love the HGC, it's great, but it's not enough. Like, I want to go play on international stages, especially LANs. I miss playing LANs. I'm sad the HGC isn't LAN, so I'm really excited to try and be able to make it there, and with our success so far, I think we can.
That's honestly a question too we've asked a lot of the people we've had on, and it's always the same thing. Like, the HGC is pretty great, but we kind of really miss LANs, like the community feel of it, the I don't know. There's more in it for the player. I don't know how to say it. It's just a better presentation for the player. Better.
Yeah. It's like, let's see. It's hard to express how it feels to play in front of an audience. It's like, it's this, I don't know, euphoric feeling where it's like you can't get it any other way than to actually just play an event like that. I played a few back when I played League, and so switching over, I haven't actually played a professional Heroes LAN. I played one in Collegiate. It's called Collegiate Coliseum, I think. I played against ASU there. That's how I met the GFE guys. But, it's just this completely different experience that it doesn't get duplicated by, even with the 15,000 people watching on Twitch every week, it doesn't...
Right.
It doesn't mean anything to us. Well, okay, that's not the right way to say it.
Well, let's be fair. Those people are monsters.
Yeah, it means a lot, but it doesn't create the same feeling.
Oh, yeah.
That seeing that live audience in front of you, like, screaming or whatever, it's so much better to have that experience. And that's all, you know, I really want to do is, like, play for the fans, play, you know, in front of all those people, because it just, it's something. It's something else.
I think it's awesome that you quantify that and want that, because, I mean, like, yeah, I mean, any professional in any entertainment venue, half of it is the crowd reaction. I mean, it's just musicians tour for their reason, athletes never get tired of the fans' reactions, things like that, so I can definitely hear that.
I'm sorry, I think Charlie had another question. I'm pretty sure you did.
He pretty much, I mean, with what we were talking about, that answers it. Just like momentum and expectations moving forward as a group with so much momentum on your side, you know?
I can give you more on that, too. I think, like, for us, that GFE set would have been great because I think it would almost guarantee that we go to the Clash. I think we just had to win one more game after that, and due to tiebreakers, we would have already been in. But, you know, we still feel like we have a large amount of momentum going forward. Like, we still feel really good, like, about Clash. And really, the end goal is BlizzCon. Like, we'd love to go to Clash, but the end goal is to make it to BlizzCon, of course.
Yeah.
And so really pushing forward, we're like, okay, so our next week is we have Even in Death and Team Noventic, which are the bottom two teams. And we know they're actually very strong teams. Like, when you watch HEGC, it's hard to say because they really have not shown any good performances since they've been, you know, this half. It just hasn't looked good. But when you scrim these teams, they're not bad teams. Like, they actually are very good. So it's hard to, like, be like, oh, we're definitely going to win these matches, because they could just show up one day. They could be like, this is scrims now, and they could 3-0 us or something, like, out of nowhere. Like,
yeah. That sinking feeling near the end when you know you've been outdrafted. Like,
yeah, as well as we play during tournament days, because our team has really shown up on tournament day, like, these teams could do the same and they could beat us. So we're not, like, complacent, like, oh, we're into the Clash, but we're really excited, because if we win these two games this week, I could be wrong. I could be wrong. I haven't, like, fully gone through every possibility that can happen.
Yeah.
But due to tiebreakers that we have over Freedom and Tempo Storm, we should be guaranteed at least the third seed for Western Clash if we win both our games this week. Even if we lose to Roll20 the week after.
That's exciting. I mean, like I said, you guys got so much momentum on your side, so it's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the meta real quick. What are your thoughts on the current meta? Is there anything that you'd like to see come back? Anything that you wish you could play in this current meta? What are your thoughts? How do you feel about it? Well, let's pick your brain here a little bit.
So there's good and bad things about this meta. Like, there's a lot of things that are viable right now. Like, you can play a lot of different strategies and you can win with them. But also, there's some stuff that's just very, anti-fun. It's very, like...
Tassadar!
I mean, you're not wrong. You're just not wrong. Like, Tassadar is one of them. Like, we play it because we're very good at playing comps with Tassadar, but every other team can play Tassadar comps just as well. I feel like it's not hard. It's very oppressive character. And the same thing is, like, the double healer, like the Uther Oriole Vala. Like, that is not fun to play against. It basically, you have to play perfectly to beat it, and they just can make a million mistakes and still win the game, which I think is a problem in the game design. Like, I don't think you should have a comp that can make infinite mistakes and still win a game unless the other team plays flawlessly.
That's always been a problem with healing in Heroes compared to other MOBAs. It's fine when it's just one healer, but when you start introducing other elements, it can get very out of control. We actually did that once with a couple of the people on the show, and I was Uther and somebody else was Morales, and our main DPS was Vala. And he was like, this is ridiculous.
And for me, it's hard to say whether the problem is in healing or if it's in characters like Vala, because Vala, if you take away the factor of having these like this double healer, like, she's extremely weak just due to the fact that she's a very soft character, and if you get on her at all, she's just gonna die. But I don't think that the character should not be meta to that. Like, I don't think she should be nerfed, because if you don't pick her in this one style, then she's kind of bad. But if you pick her in this one style where this character can't die, she does way too much damage.
Yeah.
So it's like, they have to nerf the double healer, but they have to nerf the double healer without making it so you have to double heal.
Right.
Because you need your healers to still be strong enough so that they can solo heal, But if you nerf them, then that's just going to promote double healing being a more necessary composition to not just lose due to the fact that your healer isn't strong enough. And I think that was like one of the things I was sad about when they nerfed Malfurion, because I know he was a very dominant healer, but like he was one of the few healers that you would pick as a solo heal composition because he opened up more different concepts of like wombo combos and just follow-up comps, whereas picking Uther is like, I'm just going to keep someone alive in stuns, but my sustain's not great. Well, we'll just throw in an Aurel or we'll throw in another healer to make up for it.
Aurel and Uther kind of emerged right as Malfurion got nerfed, and it's like, wait, no, you can bring old Malfurion back. He's not so bad now. And yeah, that's just the nature of the beast. There's some weird interaction this game. Like, if you're a quick match player, it sucks to go up against somebody who queued up with, you know, Cho'Gall and Aurel. It's just... Yeah. You can just get absolutely rolled for 10 minutes and go, okay, well, what was that? But
and, like, on top of that right now, they have Genji in the meta, and I love Genji. I really do. I think he's actually fairly well-designed. I just think he might be a little overtuned because, like, you can see in his win rates, it's just a little absurd. And sometimes when you play against him, it's really weird because you pick the counters, you pick, like, a lot of CC, and sometimes Genji feels absolutely useless. Even in competitive play with like good Genji players, like you just dumpster him with crowd control all game. But sometimes Genji just pops off and kills your whole team, and it's just like I don't know how they're going to make him more fair. I think honestly, if they just tweak Dragonblade, that might be all they need to do. Because you can counterplay him a lot, but when he starts Dragonblading your team, if you have nothing at that point, like, he actually is just going to solo wipe your team, and I don't know that that's necessarily something they want, but it remains to be seen, just due to the fact that his win rates are a little too high, I feel, for competitive. The other character in the meta I'd want to touch on is Anubarak, because I think Cocoon is just a really, like, anti-fun ability, and I think, like, one of the things a lot of tanks don't really look at right now is Locust Swarm's still a really good ult, and like Web Wrap, all it does right now, it takes someone out of the fight. It's a point click ability with really, really long range that takes someone out of the fight for 8 seconds, unless they pick one of like six characters that have like for instance Leaming Laser or Tassadar Auto or Tracer Auto, and then they just break it instantly, and then you've just taken a worthless ultimate. And so like I wish they would find a middle ground, whereas it's useful versus every character. But it's not this broken, like, 8-second CC. Like, yeah. I don't get... Like, it's an ultimate ability that only stuns. So I don't see why not make it an unbreakable 4-second stun. Or something like that. Where it's, like, it's more balanced against everyone. It doesn't take you out of the fight for 8 seconds. But it would be the longest crowd control in the game. But it doesn't do any damage. And you can't damage the target that is stunned. I think that would be balanced, like force. I know that's like a very easy fix, and I see what they're trying to do with the range decrease. I think this is on PTR now, I'm not sure, but they decrease the range and decrease the missile speed, which I do like those changes, because for healers that have ice block or characters with blink abilities, you can now more reliably dodge the cocoon. But I still think I would rather see the direction of like making the stun time reduced, but also make it not a breakable thing where it just instantly breaks against like laser.
It'd be like getting hit by a time trap, basically.
Yeah, and the thing is nerfing Cocoon to the point where it's still a good pick, but it's not always the right pick, would be good, because they have a good ult like Locust Swarm as the other option. For instance, it has 100% win rate in HGC right now, because I played it versus GFE and we won with it, so I think I'm the only person who's played Locust Swarm the entire HGC. Nice. I'm also the only person who's played ETC in all of HGC NA. Someone else picked it in Europe, actually.
Casanova, the only guy in NA who wants to have fun with Anubarak.
Yeah, only guy who wants to have fun. It's also awful playing Cocoon. Cocoon is awful. I hate it. Like, you throw your Cocoon and you E in, and if the target doesn't die before the Cocoon breaks, you're actually just a worthless character.
Yeah.
And, like, if you ever burrow in against, like, actually anybody, it doesn't matter, like you burrow in against anybody and your team doesn't follow up instantly, you just die every time, because he's like the softest tank in the world, I swear.
See, and I like it as like an escape mechanic, you know, but yeah, it But when, then why are you taking that? You're
it sucks because you have to use it. You have to use it as like you have to use your burrow charge as an escape like half the game, and it just feels so awful. Like I don't like playing a noob rack, but he's the best like best tank right now. Probably Stitches a noob, probably a noob first then Stitches. So yeah. I have to play it, and it's horrible.
God, he hates Cocoon almost as much as I hate enough to share. Like I just. I get so tilted when I see a Chen take enough.
I don't think that's a good talent either, to be honest. Like,
thank
I played
you.
A lot of,
thank
I played,
you.
I played quite a bit of Chen when I was playing melees. I don't like enough to share. I don't think it's very good.
Wow, that I just I hate it. It's a terrible ability.
It feels worthless. Just go Donkey Kong build. Donkey Kong build is where it's at. Donkey Kong build is where it's at. You just
throw barrels. You just threw it all away.
Yep, you gotta be a monkey. Love it.
God, I just hate cake build. It's
I've never had more fun playing a melee than playing like a team league and playing Chen and actually just casting W the entire game after I finish my quest. Oh, just throwing barrels. So much fun.
That's excellent.
Oh, God. Okay. So, going back...
It's just frustrating when you can't move your character because this monkey's throwing barrels at you.
Okay, so going back to the PTR. Stukov is in the PTR, and you can't... answer
he looks busted.
Go ahead. Yeah,
go ahead. I said he looks busted, but go ahead.
Okay, so, yeah, you answered my question. What are your thoughts on Stukov, honestly?
Yeah, so I've only gotten to play one game, and I was told he's actually currently bugged, so maybe he's not as good as I think he is, but I actually don't see him being bad, regardless of if the bug is, like, very large on the healing number or not. Basically, there's a level 7 talent for Stukov that makes it when you detonate one of your Ws, it reduces the cooldown to 5 seconds, I believe? Mm-hmm. And so your burst heal heals for about 1,000 at, like, level, I don't know, like, 10, 13. It heals for a lot. It heals for way too much, right? It's, like, people have been comparing it to Ancestral, which I believe is the bug. It's, like, healing too much. But, like, even if it heals half an Ancestral, like, that is insane.
Yeah.
And so, like, even if it's healing double what it's supposed to heal right now, it's still good after they fix it. It's still amazing. So you go that talent, you have this massive burst heal on a 5-second cooldown. Because... as a good Stukov player, I expect any pro Stukov player that is playing it is going to abuse that talent. Because anytime they have their D up, they're going to throw W at one target after their heal has spread to all their teammates and hit their trait. It's going to go on a 5-second cooldown, and they're going to have healed their entire team to full HP. And then they can do it again in 5 seconds. Especially after, I believe on 13 or 16, he gets... is it Patient Zero Universal Carrier. It spreads back to him. That I think that's what it is. Yeah, so that you get that talent, and basically you can permanently keep your infection on all 5 members of your team by just your positioning alone, which is what I was doing in the one game I played, is you just position, and you can permanently keep that hot up. Even though it doesn't heal very much, it means anytime someone gets low, you just throw out W, hit D, and then it goes back on 5-second cooldown, and you respread it to everyone on your team. And so anytime you need to heal, you have the panic button of throw W, hit D, and if you need to use it again in 5 seconds, you can use it again in 5 seconds, but then you need to you ping your team back, and you're you know, like, I don't have a heal for 16 seconds or whatever, because at that point it's a little bit rough. But he's going to be a very high-skill healer, because you have to play around that trait, because I think if you don't play around that talent on 7, he's actually just very balanced. Like, I don't think he's that... extremely oppressive or anything other than that talent, I think makes him absolutely busted. Like, will be best healer in the game because of that talent.
Right now, he's number one hammer killer because
that's
channel silence outranges hammer.
I saw that clip. I saw you have to take talents that I don't think you would actually take,
right.
But it is so funny to watch like a hammer just sit there and can't do anything.
She gets silenced into siege mode.
Oh my god.
Yeah, she can't get out of siege mode.
Yep, she can't leave siege mode, and there's talents that make it so you can outrange her siege mode, so basically you can't even auto him back. Because, like, usually, I actually think it would be fair, because you silence her, but she can just auto you the whole time. So she can't move, so it's actually good for your team overall, but at least she can trade back and it's not completely void of any counterplay and you're just getting solo killed by the support. But right. If you take the proper talents, he can outrange it and you are just, you have to sit there until you're dead.
I think that talent is either at 4 or 7 for the arm increase.
If it's on 7, you could never take it.
Yeah, right.
But if it's on 4, if you're against a hammer, go for it. I think that'd be great against a hammer. Because it is good against it, even though she's not very meta right now. I'm sure you see her still a decent amount in Hero League, Quick Match, wherever. Like, it's a very funny counterplay, very fun interaction. His ultimates look really good, too. Both of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking about that, talking about Genji, you could always just shove him across the map.
Well, I would say a good Genji player should probably not get hit by shove. It's not the quickest skill shot in the game. But a good Stukov player could still probably land it. There's some prediction involved. You can still catch that Genji. Just shove him across the map. I think shove, I do believe, is a better ultimate than the other one. Before I actually got to play him, I thought the other one was going to be a lot better, the like flailing arm, just because there's a lot of versatility to disengage, engaging if you find a flank. It's just a very good, versatile ultimate. But shove has a 20-second cooldown.
Yeah.
That is just invaluable. If you can push someone almost across the map every 20 seconds, like, you're going to get it off probably twice in a fight, maybe 3 times, seeing as how you have so much sustain as that character. And just if you can catch it on a healer and push them completely out of the fight while your team focuses someone down, like, there you go. You just won the fight for your team. Push a tank out so he can't get on your carries. If the tank dives past you, push him into your fort. Like, there's so many good things you can do with that ultimate, and the fact that it's on that short of a cooldown, to me, makes it a must-pick over the flailing arm, even though I do believe the flailing arm is actually a very strong heroic ability. So
I feel like the cooldown has to come up in the future. There's no way it stays at 20 seconds the entire time he's around. So maybe we'll get to see arm later.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's the same thing as Gust. Gust is still a must-pick. But back when it was 40 seconds, there was, even if they buffed Hinterland Blast immensely, you always pick that 40-second cooldown ultimate if it has impact. You want to have that quick thing.
Right. Yeah. Especially Gust. I mean,
Gust is broken anyway.
So I think that's about all I got. I got a funny mention thing. Actually, the second barrel boy that we've had on this show,
oh, really?
Way long time ago, Base Drop.
I don't even know Base Drop.
Oh, you weren't on. You guys weren't on the same.
I played for barrel boys with Mac. This was right before HGC. He revived the name because he was enjoying playing with the team so much. Basically, he said this team feels like how barrel boys felt, and so he said we're gonna make the name barrel boys, and so that's how we ended up using it. So I only started playing HOTS about a year and a half ago now. I started playing for Heroes of the Dorm. I got pulled off of my team's league team because they weren't very good, and I was the only good player on it. And the HOTS team had some good players, so they were like, hey, come play Dorm. You can win free tuition. So I tried to play Dorm. We made it to top 16, but we didn't make it to the Final Four. And from there, I just pursued pro HOTS.
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. So I believe we're way past the 30-minute mark. So are there any shout outs you'd like to give out to anybody or anything like that? Now's the time to do it.
I'll just shout out to No Tomorrow. That's just our team. Everybody's doing just an awesome job this season, so shout outs to everybody. Everybody's working hard. Shout outs to our manager, Christy Flower. I want to just do a little quick shout out to Mainframe. They've just been providing me gear as a player. They've been really just nice guys. It's a local company. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah, so it's a local company that I want to give a shout out to because they've been really cool giving out gaming glasses and hats and t-shirts and all kinds of stuff to me. So they're awesome guys. So quick shout out, Mainframe USA.
And his Twitter's right below his portrait in our layout, so you can follow him there and probably find more information on that.
All right, awesome. Thank you.
All right, back to the show. And thanks for having us.
Well then, welcome back to the Heroes Power. That was a really great interview, you guys. So Thanks for putting that together, and man, get a really tight shot of PFLMG's eye there. I appreciate that. Oh man, but yeah, that was a lot of fun. Let us know what you think on Twitter, or Twitch comments, stuff like that. We'd love to hear your feedback on these really cool interviews we've really lucked out and had the chance to do. Thanks to Zex for really pushing for that and putting these together and really taking the torch on that, so to speak.
Yeah, and keep an eye out for my budding dubbing career for old Kung Fu films. It's coming out soon. The first one is Invincible Armor. Why don't you check that out?
Are you going to be in the sequel for Kung Pao Under the Fist?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Oh, my goodness. But yeah, we're going to transition to talking a little bit about HGC. And just like we were saying, no tomorrow. They're looking pretty good.
I believe that they're tied for third right now, or they're just sitting at third right now.
They're sitting at third. They're 3-1, but I think the big surprise for everyone is Team Freedom at 4-1, tied with Gale Force Esports at 4-1.
Yeah, holding the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, owning the tiebreaker as well at 14 wins, 4 losses versus 13 wins, 9 losses. That's insane.
Yeah.
And I still don't like Team Freedom. I think they're, I'm going to come out and say, I think they're a bad team. I don't know how they did it.
Cure.
But
Cure.
They're performing incredibly well. Like, I will give them that. They're playing out of their minds.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't like them.
I think that's something. There's something really to be said though about Cure, because he's been talked for at least a year plus about how amazing of a player he is, and just no team was giving him a chance. Because what I've heard is he's difficult to play with, but clearly this shows that he can, in a proper environment, play well, yeah. And mm-hmm. That's really proven out with their results.
Do you think he's the kind of guy who micromanages? I mean, I don't know if you want to speculate or not. Do you think he's the kind of guy who micromanages a lot of stuff and just needs to be in total control, or?
I almost equate him to a little bit of kind of how Equinox is, where he just kind of pulls the team with him, whether or not they want to go along for the ride.
He probably a dedicated shot caller, then.
Oh, yeah, I would say so.
Because I mean, and to harken back to the interview, I mean that's exactly what Casanova said. No Tomorrow was missing as well. So mm-hmm. Apparently, a shot caller is the way to fame in HGC.
Yeah. But any other thoughts on the standings in HGC North America? I unfortunately didn't get to watch too many of the games this week because of the internet issues. But
We mentioned it on the interview. But the Gale Force No Tomorrow set on Friday. I went to 5 games. Gale Force played like small children in the first one. but they ended up winning the set anyways. But I mean, it was a 5-game set, and it was most of the games were competitive. It was a big deal, right? Because prior to this, both of the teams were 3-0, I believe.
Yes.
Or 4-0 or something. So we thought this was, you know, determining number one. And Gale Force, if they won this, or No Tomorrow won this, they were going to win out the rest of the season. And then Gale Force lost to Freedom, which was weird.
Yeah. Gale Force, they're still transitioning, I think, or getting used to. I believe Michael Udall is shot calling now. I know he's kind of dipped in and out of that role multiple times through being with Gale Force, but obviously they're looking good. The addition of Caffeine and K1 seems to have been the right decision so far.
There's probably a little bit of ironing out to do, but I'm sure at the end of the day they'll still be a top team. But I mean, what's surprising is 1-4, we don't see Tempo Storm, Superstars, or Noventic. They're 5, 6, and 7, so mm-hmm. It's interesting how much of a shakeup has happened, and moving forward, can teams like Roll20, No Tomorrow, and Team Freedom sustain this kind of, I don't know, just change in style and attitude and play?
Yeah, if I had to choose one of those teams that you listed, I would go with Roll20 because they've been consistent, and I think they're a really strong squad overall for the long term. But I want to speculate a little bit on this. Tempo Storm was the only team that didn't make a move during the season change. Do you think that is partially to blame to their struggles here in the second half or second season? I don't know what's called.
I don't know that it is. I mean, they were good, right? They were the second place team. I think they won the regular season, but they just do worse, slightly worse internationally than Roll20.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't a big reason to change. It was like, okay, we're good. We have built-in team synergy, which is incredibly important in Heroes of the Storm. So let's not fix what isn't broken, and let's keep going.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's causing it. I think they're underperforming, mm-hmm. and Team Freedom is overperforming.
Yeah.
No Tomorrow. I don't know. They could be slightly overperforming, but I think they're still going to be an upper half team. So it's just there. A bunch of teams got boosts that we weren't expecting.
Yeah, and to be fair, I don't think it's time to panic at all for Tempo Storm. They're 3-2. They win a series, and other teams start losing series. They're in the top echelon of NA Heroes again, and I think they still have a shot at the Clash. But I'm not totally.
Their last
sure
two
out.
Matches are versus Roll20 and Team Freedom.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is they win those series and they kind of control their own destiny.
Yeah, they do, because if they win those and they knock those teams above them down, they pull themselves up.
Yeah.
But it's not. Tempo Storm doesn't have any easy wins left.
No.
The thing, I guess I'm kind of rooting for Tempo Storm to not make it, because they've made it so many times and they've proven they can't get the job done on the international stage. So I'd like to see the other teams be able to give that shot. I don't know that they're better. This isn't me saying like these teams are better than Tempo Storm if they make it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously number wise in that particular week or whatever, but overall Tempo Storm is the more refined team out of any of these teams outside of Gale Force. So I don't know. I'm not that excited to see a Tempo Storm come back. I want to see Freedom and No Tomorrow ride this out and shake things up.
I do want to see Gale Force, though, in the Western Clash. And I really think they have probably the best shot out of all these teams to make a splash there.
Mm-hmm.
But any closing thoughts on North America before we talk a little bit about EU? Because EU has been pretty fun. Zex?
It's Clown Fiesta. Just call it what it is.
Yeah.
Can't spell Clown Fiesta without an A.
That's right.
So we're going to move on to EU, which has one team completely through to the Clash already. That's Fnatic, sitting up top, sitting pretty at 5-0. They're looking really good. They've not let that big international win let them coast, so to say. But the interesting thing about Europe versus America is there's quite a bit more parity. As you go down the rankings, is every team has gotten a series win, including the new teams who came from AGC Open, Team Good Guys and Zealots. Tricked Esports beat Team Liquid, I believe it was this past week, and Team Expert has put themselves into the number 3 spot, and they lost a series to Fnatic, but they did take a game off of them that shows that gods do bleed, so...
Yeah.
Bowerfan, what are your thoughts on EU currently, and as the resident Team Expert fanboy, how do you feel about them?
I mean, I say pretty much week to week, EU's the much better watch. It's honestly, time-wise, it's more convenient for me most of the time, because middle of the day, you know. But I think Expert kind of might be backsliding a bit, and I hate to say it, but I'm really worried about their past track record of not handling big losses very well as a team. So I'm hoping that that's not the case this time, but I'm almost looking that for Dignitas to overtake them now.
Yeah, I mean, that's like you were saying last season. They had that big run in the first couple weeks, and then they lost that series 3-2, I think, against Dig. And I think after that, they lost every single series for a couple of weeks.
They got 3-0'd by Fnatic in the next series 2 days later. And yeah, it was all downhill for a little bit there for Expert. And they've really solidified themselves as a team recently. And you can't let a Fnatic loss when Fnatic's already qualified for the Clash and just looks head and shoulders above everybody in NA and EU.
I mean, right? they just beat Korea, right? Yeah. A couple weeks ago.
Right. They're the team. So, like, hopefully they're keeping that in the front of their minds and able to recover from that. But I have my worries that Dignitas is gonna come roaring back here.
Yeah, all eyes are on EU and Fnatic for sure. But talking a little bit about the games this week, Blizzard put out a really great article about some of the really great series this week. We're going to get a lot of really solid series. In EU, we have Dig versus Fnatic on Saturday to start things off, and boy, does Dig have any shot here, or is Fnatic just still
Dig always has a shot? I think Fnatic will win it, but you can't count Dig out against anybody.
Fnatic and Dig is like El Clasico of pots. El Clasico being a Dota reference to the legendary Na'Vi Alliance versus Alliance games from Dota 2.
Oh my goodness.
Which were really, like, if you've not watched that set between Na'Vi and Alliance.
What was it, International 3?
It was International 3.
Go watch that series.
If you've not watched that series, watch it. It is some of the best MOBA action, like, MOBA set you'll ever watch. Like, just hands down. It's a gripping series all the way through. I believe it went all five games. It literally came down to a $1 million dream coil from their puck stuffing two TPs back to base to defend when Alliance decided to go core all in on a core.
And Heroes Term, think of a root on an enemy hero trying to TP back or something, basically.
Just a good, not even that, it just had to be a good moonfire. Yeah. Really.
But yeah, Team Dig versus Fnatic, going to be a must-see this weekend. Going back to NA, though, Roll20 versus Tempo Storm. P5G had already mentioned that, so some really good series this weekend. Some fun stuff to watch. We hope you guys will be able to watch. And let's go on to the patch that dropped today. Stukov is finally live into Heroes of the Storm in the Nexus right now. What do we all think, besides him being broken, as all kinds of broken heroes are when they first release?
Well, it's pretty hard to tell balance right now because there's just Stukov on both teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. His healing definitely doesn't feel as overtuned as it looked in the PTR, that's for sure. I don't feel like you can't take him down or members of his team down, so that healing overtune bug might have just been the fix that he needed to be balanced, but we'll see moving forward. I think he's got a lot of utility and he's definitely a top tier support. I just don't know that he's busted.
Mm-hmm.
And when we jumped, we talked about a lot of the stuff with Zul last week.
Yeah, we did.
So we don't really need to cover that. I saw him in one game. It felt like he did a lot more damage, so that'll be interesting moving forward to kind of monitor him. They did make changes to Malfeel, though, and he probably needed them because he was a little bit ridiculous.
Didn't matter because we still won that game.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But he's OP.
Yeah,
I mean, just the Reaper Mark going down 0.25% and the armor he gets from Tormented Souls being cut in half from 20 to 10. That's big. It reduces his survivability on an ultimate he always took. And it reduces the overall damage he puts out. So we might see some more balance there.
Yeah.
At least that's my hope.
For sure.
And it feels too good.
Yeah, and obviously the Anubarak changes. I think we talked about those last week, but if not, basic attack damage being reduced. Maximum health reduced as well. Which seems
these
to
are
be
orange
their...
changes, so they weren't there last
okay,
week.
Okay, they were not there. They were there. They're there today, right now, live.
Right.
In Heroes of the Storm. Yeah. I did play a new rack. It didn't feel too bad. I did pick Locust Swarm because it did get buffed. Mm-hmm. Didn't seem to have too much of an effect, but this is what
Locust
Blizzard
Storm
does.
Is still good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This is what Blizzard does though with a new rack every time. Is like, well, he's too good. Better nerf his health pool.
Oh, he sucks. Better buff his health pool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not his health pool. I think mm-hmm. the cocoon changes are the most impactful.
Oh, yeah.
The range going down, and like Casanova had touched on, the missile speed going down gives players with ice block or other forms of stasis ways to react, or a better chance to react now. So rather than it just being this really fast web that suddenly you're in, you can actually see it now and have a moment to react. So
mm-hmm.
That's a big nerf to Cocoon. Because
yeah, really
good
is.
Players won't get caught in cocoons that have a way to avoid it now.
Yeah, and who was it? It was I'm blanking on his name for some reason. The healer for Dignitas. Why can't I think of his name?
Bakery.
There we go. See, I just had to talk it out. But there was a clip where he dodged a cocoon with ice block, and it was glorious. It won't be. People are going to be like, oh, it's not as impressive now, but it's still a cool thing. I don't know. I just thought of that because that was cool. The other
doing it when it's not
yeah,
slow missiles. Yeah, that's huge.
The other big change seems to be Tyrande, who I haven't played in I don't know how long, but basic attack damage going up and
attack speed.
Attack speed. A lot of the talent skin changed as well.
I think she's going to complement Stukov really well. I feel like she covers, she heals just enough to complement some of his bigger cooldown moments.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a great assassin stun complement to most team comps. So she's really going to fit on teams. Like, Blizzard's kind of saying here, like, look, she's not a solo support, guys. Don't play her like one. She'll be better not as a solo support. She is a support. She gives supports just a little bit of extra healing mm-hmm. and then brings her own game of damage. Like, that's what she does.
Yeah, and that's even something that the developer comments touched on a little bit about. Yeah. They're actively aware of the support role perception issue, especially since it's not just Tyrande that kind of runs into this. And they're going to be looking into more options. So it looks like this is kind of a bit of a band-aid for now, just to alleviate concerns with the hero.
They're basically saying there's not really a problem, but people think there's a problem.
Exactly.
And I think this really hints that we're going to get some reclassification soon of heroes, which I think is vastly needed. We need ones marked as true tanks and bruisers. We need, you know, Tyrande not marked just as a blanket support in the same vein as Stukov and Uther and Ariel, because she's not. Mm-hmm. So things like that would help a lot.
Yeah.
Even, you know, splitting melee and ranged assassin would be nice.
Right.
Because it's a very different skill set.
Yeah, and you can classify the damage that they output, too, whether it's sustain or burst.
Mm-hmm.
All of this kind of stuff, it does, like, if you already know your character in and out, it doesn't really make a difference to you. But when learning a new character, it's nice to go into a mindset with that character when it's clearly labeled for you. Okay, I'm a ranged assassin who does good burst damage, so I gotta look to hit my big combos, as opposed to, you know, okay, I'm playing Jaina, I'll just, you know, hit him with ice, that's what I do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's going to affect players who play the game a lot, obviously, but it helps.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. And I wanted to touch on some kind of miscellaneous stuff, though, real quick. I'm curious of your guys' thoughts on it. We saw a ton of skins come out with this patch as well, but a lot of them are just... I don't want to devalue the art team's work too much, but they're reskins of skins we already have, or recolorizations. Like the Horrific Prime Evil Diablo, the two Kerrigan skins that came out are... recolors of skins that already exist. I mean,
pretty much all of them are recolors outside of Zul and Stukov, right? And Zul's Bone Visage armor is sweet.
Yeah.
That looks really good.
I expect a lot of this for a while, just because with 2.0, they removed the, okay, every skin has three tints, right? And so we're going to get, again, like, there are skins that just don't need three tints. Like, there's no reason for Tychus to have three tints on his skin. They're all blue. you know, but then there's other things like this Primeval Diablo where it's like, oh, we have this cool idea of another skin tint we want to add. And so the artists are free now to add in as many as they want to make it look really cool.
They did it with Kerrigan. Kerrigan's recolor looks great. The Templar Kerrigan.
Yeah, and then the new Primeval Diablo skin looks sick. And the Johanna skin looks great. So I'm not, you know, it's, you know, and I think we'll get a lot of these. It's not like they're going to stop producing new skins. You know, because I would assume they can pump out these recolors a lot faster than a whole new character model.
Right. And I would say if you like a certain skin, it gives you a better chance of getting that skin out of a loot box because it has more tints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like
Primeval Diablo is a great example.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What I find interesting is these new skins are coming out at 2,400 credits, at least the legendary skin. I don't know if that's like their permanent price or if it goes down in a few weeks.
I think they're always higher when they first released for shards.
Yeah.
And the gem price, if there is one, is normal.
Yeah.
And then the shard price decreases.
Okay. Well, I hope the Taika skin is available later because I don't want to spend 2,400 shards on him. Because I don't really play him that much, but it's a freaking awesome skin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough call.
Yeah. I don't know. Any thoughts on that stuff, Zex? You've been quiet. You okay there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just admiring
submitting Lipta applications.
No, yeah. Okay. Yeah, there you go. Oh my goodness.
No, I'm just admiring my Tychus and his shorts and his jiggly belly.
other miscellaneous stuff. Tickets for BlizzCon are sold out once again. There was a third batch of tickets. I don't think we ever mentioned on this show, but if you follow BlizzPro.com, you would have heard about it. Also on Twitter at BlizzPro. Bloodlust Brawl is returning this week. Rest in Peace's pool party. And Zex's thoughts on Bloodlust. We already talked about at the top of the show, and it's not good.
But I hate it.
I'll go play it from my loot chest, and we'll see how it is. Balrog Fan, I think we'll close out the show here. But any closing thoughts before we head out and close out?
I just want to thank Casanova for agreeing to come on the show and do an interview with us. We really appreciate him taking time out of his busy schedule to sit down with us and answer some of our silly questions. I had a lot of fun with that interview, and I was really glad that I got a chance to be a part of it. So thank you, Casanova.
Yeah, most definitely. P-Flame G, how about you?
I don't have much.
Zex?
Nice.
Same as Charlie. Thank you to Casanova for, you know, dealing with my constant poking at him. Especially shout out to their manager. She was the one that was dealing with me the entire time. And, you know, trying to get an interview and everything like that. And, yeah, they were a lot of fun to... And he was a lot of fun to interview. I'd love to have him back on the show at some point later on down the road. Past that, I get those applications submitted so I can start doing my dev work now.
good luck with those, my friend. But, before we close out, make sure if you are listening to us through iTunes... if you do like the show, go ahead and give a 5-star review. It really helps the show grow and continue to reach more people, and more people can hear these awesome interviews we've been having. Also, old episodes are also available in video form on youtube.com/BlizzPro. Check out our other shows on the BlizzPro network. Westmarch Workshop, 6 p.m. Pacific on Wednesdays. It's all about Diablo 3. Necromancers just come out a few weeks ago. They have all sorts of stuff to talk about there with Season 11 coming out as well. Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific is Payload Podcast. all things Overwatch, all things Doomfist. Go check it out Sunday or no Mondays. I think it's Mondays now at 7 p.m. Pacific. I think they finally settled on time. Well Met for Hearthstone is there. The new expansion has been announced, so check that out if you're curious about the Death Knight thing that they're doing with that, which looks really cool. Arcane Analysis is the World of Warcraft podcast. It's audio format only, so check out for blizzpro.com for links to that. And as always, our Discord is up. Discord.blizzpro.com. Come chat with us. Come find some games with us. And that is going to be it for episode 109 of Here's Power Hour. Thank you guys for joining us. We will see you in the Nexus and see you next week. And as always, stay tight.
Stay tight.